Hello, and welcome to another episode of Over My Dead Pod. This is your host for today, Kate Carter.
And I'm Kylie Colwell.
And welcome back, Podheads. Another week, another dollar. All right, so Kylie, per usual for what I do, we're just going to jump right in to today's story. We have a girl today. Her name is Adrian and her last name is Salinas. So Adrian Salinas was born on November 5th, 1993 in Arcadia, Arizona. Arcadia is like the outskirts of Phoenix. So pretty close by. She was one of two kids and they were actually raised by their father, Rick. Rick did his absolute best to make them have like a normal, wonderful childhood growing up. Mom wasn't in the picture. Adrian was known as like this super bubbly, kind-hearted, happy girl, very outgoing. And she basically kept a really good, close-knit friend group from elementary to high school. So like, that's awesome. Love it. Just overall, great person to be around. And not only was she a very loving person, she was very smart. So she grew up reading. And after graduating high school, she wanted to go to college to be a journalist. That was like her big passion. And speaking of her small friend group, in middle school, she met a boy named Francisco Ortega. Francisco basically was entering her friend group and the two of them had like crushes on each other, but they just played it off as like being best friends. And that continues on for the rest of the story. So even though everyone was like, yeah, they're dating, they're totally dating, it was never official. Francisco was pretty much the opposite of Adrian. He was quiet, awkward, not really social, but regardless of what anyone did or said, Adrian always had like Francisco in the back of her head. Even when other dudes flirted with her later on in life, she was just like committed mentally to Francisco, but it wasn't really reciprocated. We'll go into that later. Because they were so young, I think on Francisco's side, he was like, I don't want to like settle down, tie the knot right after high school. So that was like kind of his mindset. That being said, they were still inseparable. Didn't go more than a few days without talking to each other. After graduating in 2012, Adrian and her girlfriends, Rebecca and Shaney, they all ended up getting accepted to and decided to attend Arizona State University. Since they were going there together, they were like, why not live together too? So they got an apartment in Scottsdale, which is like right down the street. They chose an apartment complex that was near the school and primarily filled with younger college kids. So it was like a good environment for them to be in. And it was nice that they were all together. They all got local jobs to pay for the apartment and really started to like branch out as these newfound college kids. So overall, the first year of college went really well for Adrian. She was doing great in school. She loved living with her girlfriends and just enjoyed her life as she should. But in 2013, she started to have a rough year. So her second year, she was now 19 years old and somehow had contracted something called Valley Fever. Didn't know what Valley Fever was. Do you?
Sounds like some, I don't know. I was thinking of like the Dust Bowl.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a disease that you can contract by breathing in fungus that grows in dirt.
Oh.
So kind of dusty.
Yeah. I'm thinking Little House on the Prairie. They would have
Yes. They would have 100% had Valley Fever. Arizona is one of the main places for Valley Fever to happen just because the main area that like carries fungus in the dirt and the sand. So Adrian actually, unfortunately, ended up getting the worst end of it. The symptoms are usually like flu-like, but she ended up being bedridden for almost 2 months. And because of that, she had to quit her job. And then she actually ended up needing to have lung surgery as well to clear out the fungus. And during this lung surgery, for some reason, because I didn't really dig too much into it because I was kind of confused on what was happening, but they like have to take a little piece of your rib bone and they're doing something with it. So I don't know, but so it's a surgery. And during her downtime while she was recovering, she obviously like anyone else, like kind of questioned her life and what she was doing and what she really wanted to do. Cause now she's not in school. Like she had to drop out for a little bit. She had to quit her job and she's just laying in bed and she's 19. Like that sucks. She was still spending a lot of time with Francisco, even though he still didn't want to make their relationship a real thing. She was okay with this, I guess, just because he was like staying around. So it was nice, but you know, at least I have him in my life kind of situation. And unfortunately that all changed on June 14th, 2013. So on this date, June 14th, roommate Rebecca threw a party at the girl's apartment in Scottsdale. It was around 10 p.m. that night that people started showing up for this party. And at some point, the girls noticed that like Adrian wasn't around. They went to her room and that's when they found her just kind of chilling out on her bed. And you have to also remember at this point, Adrian is still recovering from valley fever. So she's like, not that she was sick and going to get people like contagious or whatever, but she had just had surgery. So she's just chilling. Didn't really want to party. Not to mention most of the people at the party, she didn't know. They were Rebecca's friends and Francisco wasn't there yet. So Francisco like got an apartment somewhat close. So he was going to come to the party that night. They were able to convince her to join the party. So at some point she did, and she started drinking with them. Around 10:30 p.m., 40 people had showed up to this party.
That is my worst nightmare.
Okay, Kylie, we are the same person. When I read, because it's in all reports, like everywhere I saw it, it was like 40 people, 42 people. And I was like, that makes me want to leave the apartment.
Yeah, where's everyone sitting?
Where are they sitting? Right?
If I show up to a party and all you have is like a 3-person couch and you invite 20 people, I'm leaving.
Yep. But 40 people showed up within 30 minutes. So that's kind of nuts. But I do want to say from these 40 people, it is verified. They all knew one of the three roommate girls somehow. Like some of them were Shaney's friends. Some were Rebecca's. Some were Adrian. So like every single person there was known. And the reason I say that is because if you've ever been to a party in college or even as an adult or as a child and you show up, there's a friend of a friend. There's your roommate's friend brought their roommate who you don't know. You know, like there's always going to be people there that you don't know. Every single person was known at this party, which is cool. At some point, Francisco showed up. Adrian chilled out a little bit, but it didn't really last long because these college kids like kept on partying. And girls were flirting with Francisco and Adrian didn't like it. And so she like made a scene with Francisco about it and they ended up arguing in front of people. And at some point around 2 a.m., which the party is still going at 2 a.m., also shoot me. The two of them, Adrian and Francisco, decided to leave Adrian's apartment and go back to his apartment, which was about 6 miles away. This wasn't out of the ordinary. According to Adrian's roommates, she would often stay the night at Francisco's or vice versa. Like it was just a common thing. So nobody thought anything weird about it. And they were able to like talk more in private because they were just yelling at each other. But around 3 a.m., Adrian decided to leave Francisco's apartment on foot and walk home. Now, we don't really know what happened at Francisco's apartment. Okay. We don't know. But to leave within like 30 minutes and decide, you know what, I'm going to walk 6 miles home at 3 a.m. in the morning. I can assume it wasn't a good conversation that they had. And she was obviously pissed for some reason. Fortunately, Francisco ends up being a good guy, spoiler alert, and he didn't want to risk Adrian walking home by herself. So he actually followed her secretly in his car for a little bit. And then at some point pulled her over and was like, dude, just get in the fucking car. Like, I'm going to drive you home. It's fine. I've been watching you just to make sure. But like, this is ridiculous at this point. She got back in the car with him and they went back to her apartment. But at some point they started arguing again. And Adrian was like, stop the car. Let me out. I'm going to walk the rest of the way home. Francisco called her roommates and was like, hey, Adrian's walking home on foot. I'm going to keep watching her, but you guys like keep an eye out from your balcony or whatever. Which is nice. So Francisco is doing the right thing, even though who knows like the intensity of their conversations or arguments. At 3:40, Adrian arrived back at her apartment. When she got there, she found out the party was still going, which kind of pissed her off. She was tired. She was exhausted. She was intoxicated. And she decided, I'm going to pack an overnight bag and I'm going to drive back to Francisco's house. So there's just like, basically at this point, it's an hour and a half of bouncing back and forth. She's at Francisco. She's not at, she's at her apartment. She's walking. Now she's in a car. Like, so it's just kind of all over the place. Kind of tells you maybe the level of intoxication, but couldn't be convinced otherwise. Everybody's intoxicated at the party. They couldn't tell her not to drive. So that's just how it went. Because of who I am as a person, I have to stop and talk about driving drunk. All right, people, do not do it. So at 3:44 a.m., we know that Adrian got into her car and headed towards Francisco's home. And how do we know that? Because she crashed her car. She cut off another driver while she was driving, and in order to not hit another driver, she swerved and ended up crashing into the median that was in the middle of the road, which we've all seen those dents before. When she did this, she popped both of her front tires. Pretty much right away, one of the other cars called 911. I mean, it's almost 4 a.m. in the morning and this is happening. You kind of know it's a drunk driver. But by the time that police showed up, Adrian had already driven away from the scene. Her car would later be found in pretty much the same area that her and Francisco had been in earlier when he had like dropped her off to walk to her apartment. So it was assumed that after she crashed her car, pretty much driving as far as she could back to her apartment, the car didn't work anymore. So she got out and then walked back to her apartment. So that's around 4 a.m. And I say this is all assumed because Adrian's roommates actually never saw her come back to the apartment. They were finished with the party at this point, 4 a.m. They were probably in bed asleep. So they never saw her enter the apartment, never heard her enter the apartment. But police would later say that they believe Adrian went back home after the car crash because the clothes she had been wearing at the party were found back in her bedroom. Now, between the times of 4:10 a.m. and 4:50 a.m., so 40 minutes, Adrian called Francisco way too many times, Kylie, way too many times. And how many is too many? 32. That's the number. And then she also texted him a bunch as well. And the last text she sent to him is, "I'm coming over." So homegirl done crashed her car, walked back to her apartment, called and texted her non-boyfriend Francisco a million times, and then still said, "I'm heading back to his place." So it was obvious to assume that Francisco was probably already asleep during the phone calls and texts because he never saw them. But right after she stopped calling Francisco, a call went out from her phone to a company called the Scottsdale Cab Guy, which is a local cab company. Here's the weird thing is she asked the cab to pick her up at a local gas station, which is about 5 minutes away from her apartment. So at first you're like, okay, maybe she didn't go back to her apartment. Maybe she's at this gas station. Like, why? It doesn't really make sense. But I thought of two things. She either didn't go back to her apartment and she called the cab company from her car and then walked to the gas station to get picked up. Or she did go home, but in an attempt of trying to avoid her roommates for them to not confront her about going back and forth from Francisco's and being drunk, she was basically like, "I'm going to get the cab to pick me up somewhere else so my roommates don't know or see me like standing out there for a cab."
In college, we'd have the cabs or whatever pull up out front of our apartment complex so they wouldn't have to go through the gate, or we didn't want them to know where we lived if they were being creepy.
Yeah. I was going to say never, do not ever get a cab or an Uber to pick you up at your home. Remember that Adrian's last phone call to Francisco was at 4:43 a.m. So 9 minutes later, Adrian, or specifically a woman who matched Adrian's exact description, was seen walking through an auto shop's parking lot, which was across from the gas station that she was supposed to be picked up from. At the exact same time, a black car was also seen driving through the exact same parking lot. So just like kind of keep that in mind for now. 1 minute later at 4:53 a.m., cab driver named Thomas Simon Jr. arrived at said gas station and called Adrian to let her know that he was there. Adrian told him that she was almost there, and unfortunately, that would be the last time anyone would hear from Adrian again. 7 minutes later at 5 a.m., the cab driver Thomas called Adrian again, but it went straight to her voicemail, which, Kylie, what does that mean?
Dead or turned off.
Yeah. And the whole time that this is happening, Thomas, the cab driver, he can be seen on the security camera from across the street. So like we see him in his car the entire time. After he attempted to call her one more time, Thomas decided to leave the gas station and head back to work for another call. Okay, so now it's the next day, June 15th. Adrian's dad began to worry a little bit when he wasn't able to get in contact with her. She had planned to go over to her dad's that weekend to celebrate Father's Day. And plus, they were basically like in constant contact with each other. So it was super odd that her phone was just like off the whole day. Rick is getting a little freaked out. He hopped right on it, called Francisco, who basically told Rick everything that happened the night before, but that Adrian never showed up to Francisco's apartment. Francisco didn't think anything of it, though, because she had been drinking. So he just assumed like maybe she was back at her apartment asleep and her phone was dead. So then her dad called the roommates, Shaney and Rebecca, who told them everything they knew, but said Adrian wasn't at the apartment. The next day, June 16th, still no one had heard from Adrian or seen her, and she never showed up to the Father's Day festivities she had planned. So her dad, Rick, we love you, Rick, he went straight to the police and filed a missing persons report. And because of the whole drinking, partying story, what did the cops do? Kind of like didn't look at it. Sat on the report for a bit, didn't jump onto action or anything. They just assumed college girl was drunk, wandered off, maybe was embarrassed. Maybe she left on purpose, like never wanted to be found. But everyone else in Adrian's life knew that that was not the case. They were freaked out and they began searching themselves. The next day, June 17th, so now 3 days after the party, the police found her car. To me, just a little odd, because I feel like if you see a crashed car somewhere, I would assume same day it would get tagged by the police.
Yeah, so she's not out in like a rural area.
Right. It's odd to me that it took 3 days to tag her car and see that it was hers. So when they found her car, that's when the police decided to step in. And they ended up searching her car and then went back to her apartment to look around. The roommates gave them access. No big deal. At some point, they found a cell phone and a notebook. This was in Adrian's car. Now, I say a cell phone because we actually will never know whose cell phone it was. At her apartment, they found the clothes that Adrian had been wearing from the party from the night before. So that's why we think she had returned home. Beside her clothes were also her wallet and her keys, which obviously kind of makes sense with the whole storyline then. The first person that the police suspect is Francisco, because it makes sense. I mean, the night that she went missing, the pair of them had been arguing for hours, gone back and forth to each other's apartments, and Adrian even decided to walk on foot at some point. Now, while the police were investigating Francisco, they pretty much said, like, quote, they were pretty confident he wasn't involved. Francisco seemed to really want to find Adrian too. Like, he cooperated with everybody, answered all their questions, had an alibi, his phone stuff all matched up. But he failed a polygraph test. I don't even need to say, people, this is like three stories in a row. I don't even need to say it, okay? While looking at Francisco, well, also kind of not, the investigators went on and they questioned all 40 people from the party.
Which usually we wouldn't see them put in that kind of effort. So that's kind of nice to see.
Yep. And the fact that all 40 people were named to the cops completely checks out for the fact that those girls knew who were in their apartment, which we love to see. Good job, ladies. That's phenomenal. And the police checked everyone's alibis. They went through all of their phones, and apparently everyone took polygraph tests. From what it sounds, because we know how this all works, all of that had to have been volunteered. Like, nobody was forced to give their phone records or take a polygraph test. So all 40 of those people, thank you. Kudos to you. Good job just volunteering your information. But just like Francisco, most of the partygoers failed the polygraph test.
It's like Kate always says, they're not very reliable.
What does that tell you? Like, come on, man. If you tell me 41 people took a polygraph test and 35 of them failed it, not all 35 of those people are guilty. That just means something's wrong with your polygraph test. Like, it's just, why do we still have them? I'm going to get angry. So
also, you have a bunch of kids that were drunk and you're asking them questions about events. They don't even really remember, probably.
No. 4 a.m. partiers, 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. That just is too much.
Yeah. You asked me what I was doing at 3 a.m. when I'm drunk. I might show a little deception on the polygraph. I have no idea.
You're like, Kylie, were you drunk this night? Everyone passed flying colors, not the polygraph, being investigated. They really didn't have any leads on any of those people. So The next person the investigators would look at is the cab driver, because that also makes sense. Thomas Simon Jr. For obvious reasons, and his cab company, the Scottsdale Cab Guy Company, it was actually owned by Thomas's dad, Thomas Simon Sr. So we got Junior and Senior, and that's how I'm going to call him. So June 17th, the few days after Adrian had gone missing, the police contacted Thomas Jr., who at the moment was driving a couple around. And after calling him and asking him to come to the station, he totally agreed. He hung up the phone and he pulled his cab over. With his customers still waiting inside of his car, Junior went out to the trunk and pulled out a hacksaw from his trunk, looked at the couple and said, "What? How'd this get in here?" Fortunately, the couple that was in his cab was smart, very weird interaction that they had. And so they called the police and told them about what had just happened. So later the same day, police decided that they were going to search the lake near Adrian's apartment. And they thought, okay, maybe Adrian had walked back to her Francisco's apartment that night instead of taking the cab. She stopped at the lake, the park, and she was there. So not only did they search the entire park, but they even did like a sonar map of the water and they found nothing. The next day on June 18th, the police woke up and they were like, wait, maybe we should have treated all of this like a crime scene. And so they went to Adrian's family and they were like, hey, can we actually have that cell phone and notebook back? Like, we need to look through it, which is smart, a little too late, but okay. So Adrian's dad returned the notebook, but he said that he had already given the cell phone to investigators days earlier. To this day, Kylie, no one knows where that cell phone went. And that's why we don't know if it was Adrian's. We don't know whose it was. It's just gone.
This is the kind of shit that just pisses me off.
And you know it wasn't Rick. Rick turned it into the investigators. I believe Rick on that. It just was tossed somewhere. And we don't know what it was, and we don't know whose it was. And that could honestly answer a lot of questions. Throwing it out there. On June 20th, that's when the couple from the cab called the police to tell them about the weird hacksaw incident. And at this point, the police are like, okay, weird. We're going to dig into Thomas Jr. more and his dad and see what we can find. And the reason that they dug into his dad as well is because Thomas Sr. had a fun little criminal past of his own. He had forged some pretty heavy price checks back in the 90s. He had been caught speeding multiple times. He had done a few high speed chases of his own, caught again for forgery, stole a car, more forgery, and ended up spending a good chunk of time in and out of prison for like 20 years.
But I thought you couldn't be like a licensed taxi driver if you had a criminal record.
We gonna get to that.
Okay.
Yeah. Good question. At some point, literally the next sentence, Kylie, good job. At some point, Thomas Sr. decided he wanted to open up his own cab company, but he ended up putting all of it under his son's name so that it could be opened because he had a huge rap sheet of crimes. So anytime Thomas Sr. drove around, he was using his son's ID. Prior to Adrian disappearing, Thomas Jr. had a really squeaky clean record. He was an odd man, but squeaky clean. He was in his 40s, single, pretty much spent all of his days and nights driving around in his cab. But once Adrian disappeared and the police began investigating him, he started to act super weird. Thomas Jr. would do the most to lose the police when they followed him around in their cars. He started speeding. He would go down alleyways, cutting through parking lots, like doing the most to get them off of his tail. Obviously didn't help his case whatsoever. And so on June 27th, Thomas Jr.'s apartment and his cab were searched while he was taken into custody. And it was at this point that Thomas Jr. really showed off how pissed he was about everything. And the fact that he was being investigated, he found it like super offensive. And he was really dismissive to like the cops and the investigators in general.
Police went farther with Tom Simon Jr. than anyone else in the case. 2 days after that interview, they did get a warrant for Tom Simon Jr.'s cab, apartment, and DNA. Police searched his cab and found nothing, no trace evidence. He was acting bizarrely, then angrily.
Have a seat.
Now you want to hurt
me?
We
have an order.
You're pushing on my chest.
I just need you to have a seat.
Can you take the handcuffs off, please? I'm not allowed to have fun, man. You said to relax. I was relaxing. That's how I relax.
First, we're going to de-escalate everything.
Everything is de-escalated, but you got to
naked. And then we're going to let you
pull
get dressed.
The guy out and embarrassed him in front of these neighbors.
Then we're going to let you get
How
dressed.
Are you guys going to fix that after this?
Okay.
Then How are you going to fix my dressed. Life after this?
This is an order that we have. Okay? We're going to obtain buckle swabs from you.
What the hell is buckle swabs?
And basically, we're going to take a DNA sample from you, from your mouth.
Why do you have to do that?
Because we have an order to do that. Okay?
Which means that. I don't care, man. Do whatever you gotta do.
You guys are treating me like a criminal, and
absolutely
I'm
not.
Absolutely not. You are, too.
Absolutely not.
Can you please stay in here?
What's going on?
Man, you guys are treating me like shit, dude. All I do is drive a taxi, and you guys have put handcuffs on me. You've taken me from my house. This isn't right, man.
We're just executing an
order. Why did you let him do this to me?
We're just executing an order.
You guys know darn well. You guys even said that you saw it on the tape that I was there and the girl wasn't there. Why are you doing this? To satisfy the family? Just to check every avenue? You know what I am. You know I'm a taxi driver who does his job every night. Why do you need those?
It's just an investigative,
Does that mean you found her? I hope you did. But obviously if you did, it's not the right way. Every night, all I do is help people. That's it. I help people more than you do.
I didn't give you permission.
I'm following his direction. Can you open your mouth to ah?
That's a violation.
How is that a violation?
He just stuck something in my fucking mouth and took something that belongs to me. It doesn't matter. That's not right. Especially from someone who got a phone call and went to try and pick up a girl that called me, and then when I got there, she's not there. And you guys put some shit in my mouth? You guys are fucking disgusting creatures.
It's a sterile future.
Shut up.
I'm now going to give you back.
Whatever. I hate you, man.
Give me your cash money. Back. Your belt buckle. Your 10 cents. And
you're a disgusting human being. So is your fucking judge.
There's a copy of this
I
at your residence. But I'm gonna give you this copy
as
well.
I don't care.
Just in case you
I don't want to hear anything else from you. You're a liar and you fucking steal. You stole my fucking DNA. You don't deserve it.
I'm gonna count your cash out for you.
I don't like you either.
The video that you just watched or listened to. Can I just say that my favorite part of the whole entire video is the fact that there's a guy at the very end of the video, if you guys didn't see it, where he's in the room with everybody else and he's just kind of standing in the corner. He's got the glasses on. And Thomas Jr. just looks over at him and he goes, I hate you too.
Damn, what did I do?
Right. In my head, I would have a tear would have rolled down my face.
He's very stupid. Yeah. And as soon as he's like, oh, you guys must have found her body or you must have found her. I was like, ding, ding, ding.
What's going on here? My opinion. If you're innocent, you don't act like that. You're all over the place and you're pissed off and you would answer their questions. You would let them do the DNA test. You'd go home knowing you did nothing wrong. So obviously his behavior threw up a bunch of red flags.
No, and it's not just him. I see it a lot. People are like, why are you treating me like a criminal? And then someone handcuffed getting DNA tested. Like, what do you think's going on?
Maybe you are a criminal. Fortunately for Thomas Jr., they ended up never finding any evidence of Adrian in his car, on any of his personal belongings, and his DNA was never found on anything of hers. But that didn't stop the investigators from looking into the Simon family. Papa Thomas Simon Sr., at this point, he had been going around town doing TV interviews about Adrian's disappearance. And he was telling people his own theories about what happened. Okay, so let me just pause for a second. When I first saw that Thomas Sr. was talking to reporters and doing interviews, but wasn't involved in the case whatsoever, obviously the first thing that pops into my head is like, oh, okay, he did it. He had something to do with her disappearance. And I say that because Kylie and I know in a lot of cases, and it tends to be ones of serial killers, just throwing it out there, people who are not involved whatsoever will try to put themselves into the case. They want to be in the spotlight. They want to help the police. They want to tell the media all about this person. And everyone's like, who the hell? The neighbor just came out and started doing all like the most. And it ends up being them. Like, they're being helpful so that people don't think it's them. So when Thomas Sr. is like out and about doing all of this, but the police hadn't investigated him or anything yet, obviously more red flags is being thrown on the Simon family. So Thomas Sr. had been saying to people that Adrian, maybe she got taken in another cab that night, or maybe she was taken in a car that looked like a cab that night, because we have heard of that happening before. That's happened in many cases. There is a 15-minute video, Kylie, a 15-minute video from good old Thomas Sr. where he walks the exact route that Adrian walked from her apartment to Francisco's. And the whole time, it's like a self view. So he's walking with a camera and he's talking and narrating about, like, maybe she was taken here. Oh, look at that. That's creepy. What about this? And now she would have crossed the road here and stuff like this. Like, who? He hasn't even been investigated. Like, it's just, why is he doing the most?
I think it's weird because he's the dad of our main suspect right now. Like, I get we have the sleuths, the internet sleuths, and sometimes real life that would do that walk. But for him to do it with his criminal record, it's weird.
And we're only a few days out from her disappearance. It's not like it's been a few weeks.
Yeah, and this isn't like big national news where everyone's I need to figure this out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just unfortunate because both Thomas Sr. and Thomas Jr. were weirdos and sketchy, but the police weren't able to tie either of them to Adrian's disappearance. Like, there just wasn't any physical evidence, no DNA anywhere, and they couldn't find anything of Adrian's that linked the two, like the three of them together. So fast forward July 8th, an anonymous tip was called into the local police station saying that the caller had heard a woman screaming from an apartment. And whose apartment was it? Thomas Jr. Crazy. But when the police showed up to see what was going on, Thomas Jr. didn't give them permission to enter his residence and said that they needed a warrant. So they just left and didn't do anything about it.
I'm trying to gather my thoughts without like cussing. There are exceptions to having a warrant. One of those would be an emergency.
Yep. If an emergency or if someone's life is in danger, you're allowed to enter the residence, especially if a woman is heard screaming. And I do want to say too, the tip was anonymous and I'm just throwing it out there. If my neighbor was someone I was cool with, but I needed to call the cops on them, I would tell the cops my name. I'd be like, I'm the neighbor and blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm cool with the person next door, but there's a woman screaming. So that's kind of weird. If the person freaked me out and I heard a woman screaming, I'd probably make an anonymous tip so that I wasn't the woman screaming next, you know?
Or I would be worried of like, did I just hear that? Or maybe if it was like a movie or something and then they know I called the cops on them, like that's
going to work. Right. Yeah. So... but the cops left and there was never any like follow-up from that. At some point in July, after Adrian had been missing for a few weeks now, her family put up a reward of $10,000 if anybody could give information on her whereabouts. So not just even leading to an arrest, just where she was. On July 21st, a huge storm passed through Tempe, Arizona and caused a massive flood. This flood primarily hit a location called the Apache Junction. And this is about 30 minutes away from Tempe. And so this flood hit the area really bad. And I'm talking about like 6 feet of water bad. Cars were being swept away. Homes were getting destroyed. The whole shebang. So about 2 weeks later on August 6th, a man was walking around his home's property when he came across a human body. Can you imagine just walking around your house, like checking out flood damage, and there is a body, or shall I say what was left of it, because the body was missing its hands and its head.
Maybe I just consume too much true crime content, but because I live on a lake, every time it floods, we have a hurricane. I'm like, what if a body washed up in my backyard?
Mannequin. That's immediately what I would think every time.
Yep. Never is a mannequin.
Never is. Because of the recent weather, along with the Arizona hot temperatures, the body had actually been mummified in place, but it was pretty much basically just bones at this point. Because of this, there was no way that the police could tell how the person died. Like, there was no obvious strangulation marks or stab wounds or a gunshot to the head kind of thing. You know, they thought even for a second, like, it could have been a body that was buried before the flood. Like, what if this was someone that was in a grave and the flood had just brought them earthside? But because the head and hands were missing, a little sketchy, but also could have been scavenging animals. You know, there's so many different cases to it. But after looking into it more and trying to get an autopsy report or like a coroner's report, they noticed that there was a little scar on one of the bones. And this little scar was on the body's rib cage on one of the ribs. Like a little chunk had been taken out of the rib. And this was a very common thing for people who had ever received surgery for valley fever. August 15th, 2 months after her disappearance, the Tempe police identified the mummified body as Adrian Salinas. Even though the police now knew that Adrian was dead and they had her remains, that part of their case was completed, but they still didn't know what happened to her, how she died, how she got there, was she buried? Like, did the flood have something? You know, it was just, everything was all over the place. Now they just had her remains. But it wasn't even, they don't know if it was in the crime scene area because of the flood. They did believe that she had been buried somewhat local to that area of where she was found, just due to like how much water and where it was placed. And so the police did a little backtracking and they went back and reinvestigated all 40 party goers from the party night at the apartment. Like, can you imagine them coming back to you twice?
I feel like that's not the first place I would go back to.
No. Why are we not looking? Okay, sorry, Francisco, but like, honestly, you could tell me that Francisco's clean and I'd be like, we need to go back to him. Like, that would be my first person and then the cab driver.
Yeah, because 40 people at the party, that seems like a stretch that one of those people did it and no one knows anything about it.
Right. And even though they had gone through everybody's phones before, they hadn't looked at the cell phone tower locations to see where like texts and phone calls were being done. So at this point in the investigation, they were like, oh shit, maybe we should look and see who was in this area at this particular time to see if it matches up with where Adrian was found. But get this shit, Kylie. When the police reached out to T-Mobile, which was the majority of people's phones companies of the party goers, T-Mobile denied the request to give the police any information. They gave no reason for denying the request. And to this day, we still don't know why they did that. And so the cops were like, what? You're not going to let us look at the information? Okay, well, we're not going to try any further. And the case went stale.
So they could have applied for a warrant.
Correct. No information has been found. There was no more evidence. There was no DNA. There was nothing. And so the case just went cold. On January 13th, 2015, about a year and a half after Adrian's death and disappearance, a man named Brian Miller was arrested for killing two women back in the 90s. And some people started to think that maybe this Brian guy had something to do with Adrian's death as well. And I'm going to tell you why. This crazy motherfucker, all right? Let me just tell you, he's nuts. You would see him and you'd be like, that guy creeps me out a little bit. He grew up in a very toxic household. His mom beat the shit out of him when he was younger and his siblings. He was abused his whole life. He ran away at 14 years old. Red flags, red flags, red flags. And he would use this later in his life as an excuse for anything that he did. Now, Brian was originally from Phoenix and he stayed there his whole life. When he was in middle school, he stabbed a woman in the back at a local mall, which was like in the 80s. And then in the 90s, a woman named Angela Brasso, she was 22 years old. She was found murdered in a canal in Phoenix and she had been decapitated. Angela had left her apartment that day around 7 p.m. to go for a bike ride. But when she didn't return home, her boyfriend, who she lived with, called the police. The next day, they found Angela's body in the canal. Not only was her head missing, but her chest and her stomach were completely cut open. Then the next day, her head was found in another canal about 5 minutes away. 10 months later, another woman was found in the exact same canal as Angela's body. This body was of 17-year-old Melanie Burness, And though her head was attached, the rest of her body was cut up just like Angela's. Now, because the crime scenes matched, the police immediately thought the killer was like one person, probably going to be a serial killer. And they dubbed him, or them, the Canal Killer. Now, for some reason, which is very odd to me, Brian was actually named pretty early on in the investigation for these two murders. And that was because he had a big history of stabbing women. And he was local. So, like, he was just one of the names. They were like, we don't have any evidence that it was him, but he likes to do these kind of things. So let's put him on the list.
He's just walking around stabbing women?
Yep.
Okay.
Unfortunately for both of the murder victims, there was no murder weapon. There was no DNA. And 8 years after both of the killings, Brian moved to Washington State. But then in 2002, Brian was arrested again for stabbing yet another woman. But the dude ended up getting off because he somehow convinced a judge that it was in self-defense, though the woman had been stabbed over 32 times.
What the hell?
She was alive, by the way.
Oh, thank God.
Do you say thank God after being stabbed 32 times? Like, I don't know how bad the damage is at that point, but that's horrific. And not self-defense. So in 2005, after he got off of the last stabbing incident, he moved back to Phoenix. So at this point, Brian somehow had a wife and a child, a little girl. And it was when he moved back to Phoenix that he began to get really interested into cosplaying. That became his life. Now, his favorite character to cosplay, it was like his identity. It was a zombie hunter. When you're done with this, or anyone listening, I need you to go look this guy up and look at all of the pictures. Brian Miller, zombie hunter. He full on outfit, everything. So he transformed his car to look like an old police vehicle, and he covered it in fake blood. And he put a stuffed zombie in the backseat of the car with the window rolled down, and he drove around town in this car. Like, that was his prime car. And while he drove around in this car, every day when he left his house, he dressed head to toe in what I guess is considered a zombie hunting outfit. It's kind of like costume that looks like a police uniform mixed with like a prison uniform, I guess, and a gas mask on his head.
Like, if there were zombies in like Mad Max.
Yes.
It is terrifying. Like, this is some like haunted house type shit.
He left his house looking like that every day.
Psych evaluation, please.
Yeah. And obviously for fun, he ended up getting the nickname of Zombie Hunter. Can you imagine being his wife? Brian was also known to go to local events in town dressed up. And as you probably saw while looking him up, he loved to take pictures with police officers. That was like his big thing. He was even a part of a local cosplay group that would dress up and go to bars at night just for funsies. But as you can imagine, after starting his cosplay life, Brian's wife divorced him and took their kids.
Good for her.
Yeah. Snaps for you, ex-wife. Brian, after this, pretty much turned into like full-time cosplaying. He never left his house anymore. In 2009, Brian met a guy named Keen. Keen had just moved back to Phoenix. And by the way, I'm saying Keen as in K-E-E-N-E. He had just moved to Phoenix. He was a comic book writer. The two of them had things in common. They were single, older dudes, quickly became best friends. But in 2013, the year that Adrian was killed, Brian's best friend, Keen, started to notice that Brian had been acting a little odd. Brian was angry all the time. He wasn't working. And he now took up a hobby of waking up super early in the morning and going for bike rides around town. Kind of sad, actually, this part. But he would even post on his Facebook page, Brian, which, by the way, his Facebook page was called The Zombie Hunter. Like, it was his life. But he would post on there and be like, does anybody want to hang out with me? Does anybody want to go for a bike ride? And like, nobody would like or comment.
I mean, usually I would feel bad, but he stabbed multiple women.
Oh yeah. I forgot about that part. Yeah, you're right. But Keen said that Brian's Facebook started getting a little weird and that Brian started posting like weird memes and stuff like that. On June 12th, 2013, it's a big day, Brian posted on his Facebook page that he was, quote, unbearably lonely, end quote. And that he said, one day I will be noticed and not be a cast out, end quote. 3 days later, Adrian disappeared. It was that same night that Brian actually was in Tempe, Arizona, the same town as Adrian, and he was about 1 mile away from the gas station that Adrian was at to meet her cab driver. Get this. Friend Keen would also later come out to say that on the morning that Adrian went missing, Brian had actually planned on going on an early morning hike that day, and he was leaving his friend's house in Tempe, Arizona around 3 a.m. Adrian went missing around 4. Brian also happened to own a black vehicle at the time and had been driving it around Tempe. It wasn't his zombie hunting car, but it was a black car that kind of resembled a cab. And then get this, 2 days before Adrian's body was found, Brian posted on his Facebook page saying, quote, "Waking up in an anxiety attack and crying is not a good way to start the day. They say things have to get worse before they can get better," end quote. On the day that Adrian's body was found, Brian posted on his Facebook page, quote, this is a long one, "I will be on an extended hiatus from my group functions. This includes my groups. I will still be involved with anything I've already agreed to be a part of, but other than that, don't expect to see me scheduling events as I have emotional problems. I just can't do it. I've had a bad couple of days now, and right now I'm just sad and angry. I don't deserve what I'm being dealt with right now, and it needs to change," end quote. Side note, just to mention, Brian's Facebook page was done, like when he posted, was at 6:39 a.m. in the morning, the same morning that Adrian went missing, and it was done from Tempe, Arizona.
I don't feel bad about his emotional problems.
I'm sad, I'm angry, I have emotional problems. Well,
whose fault is that?
Yeah, you and your mom's. But of course, these things, like what Keen's saying, are just little things that people and investigators are putting together. You know, there was no physical evidence that Brian had anything to do with Adrian's disappearance. It's just he was a good suspect for being in the right place at the right time. I mean, it's 2015, 2 years after Adrian's murder is when his name's being brought up, you know? So it's just little things that like internet sleuths were putting together with the help of Keen. So get this, in 2015, when Brian is being investigated for the Angela and Melanie murders, the canal murders, the police had found DNA evidence that linked the two girls to the same killer, but they needed to grab DNA from Brian because they were like, we need to match it. So I love this. Police called Brian and they were like, "Brian, meet us at an Applebee's so that we can do a job interview to see if you can come work with us." Of course, Brian was like, "Oh yeah, hell yeah." While they're at Applebee's, he's drinking from like a cup and they take his DNA.
That is hilarious.
Yeah. Love you, Applebee's. I don't even know if they still exist anymore.
Did he even like apply for a job?
No. So like, you know, the dude was stoked. He was like, "Oh, they've seen my work out there as the zombie hunter. Like, they want to interview me
at the Applebee's."
At an Applebee's. So yeah, they got his DNA. It went on to be a perfect match to the two girls' murders. And so that's how he kind of went down. On January 13th, 2015, Brian Patrick Miller was arrested for the canal murders of Angela Brasso and Melanie Burness. A few days after his arrest, Brian's friend Keen submitted an anonymous tip to the police about Brian potentially having to do something with Adrian's murder. So it was pretty quick. After investigating the police, they were able to find that, yes, Brian was in Tempe at the exact same time as Adrian disappeared, but that he never traveled to the Apache Junction region where that flood had happened and where her body was found until 2 days later. So the police were like, "Oh, he went to that area 2 days later. That kind of doesn't match, you know, like she was probably brought there the same day or something like that." Like, and they just basically didn't follow up with it.
That is the dumbest reason I've ever heard.
That's what I said. I had to go and look at multiple articles and podcasts because I was like, "You're telling me what?" They were just like, "Oh, he went 2 days later. It would have been the same day," which there's no reason. There's no reasoning on that.
No, like her body's mummified. You guys don't even know what happened.
It was a flood. It doesn't even mean that she went. She didn't even go there. Like her body could have just been brought there.
Yeah. And then if it's looking like a crime of opportunity, like he just pulled up and she's at the gas station.
Right.
You think he had a shovel and shit like ready to go in the back of his car?
Right.
That same night?
And because her death didn't fit his exact like MO for his prior killings, the police decided that they weren't going to investigate Brian any further.
We have a woman who's decapitated. I feel like that's pretty close.
Yeah. And get this too. So when the police were searching Brian's house for the other murders and his car, which the car ended up matching the exact same one that was seen in the security footage that night, when they went to go search the car, it was gone. To this day, that car has never been found.
How the hell do you lose a car?
Exactly. How do you lose a cell phone? I don't understand these things. Brian didn't even know that he got arrested. They went to his house to go look through the car and shit like that. And the car's already gone. So you're going to tell me like, that's not weird shit. Like we could have guessed, the car being gone really didn't bother the lead detective. He was pretty nonchalant about it. Like, oh, the car's gone, whatever. Fortunately, this dude ended up leaving the case at some point and a new detective came onto the scene, which was seen as a positive move at first. So after his arrest, this part's crazy. After his arrest, Brian's ex-wife came up and she spoke to the FBI. And what she told the FBI is nuts. So she told FBI how Brian had once told her that he had killed a Girl Scout once upon a time. And that this young teenage girl had knocked on his door to sell him something when he decided to grab her. Okay. According to Amy, the ex-wife, Brian kidnapped the girl from his porch, brought her inside the house, and immediately cut her throat. Amy went on to say that Brian told her he attempted to preserve her body, but wasn't able to. So he chopped her up in little pieces and put her remains in the trash. Apparently, when all of this was happening, Brian's apartment neighbors were horrified by the overwhelming smell. And at some point when Brian went out of town after all of this, his neighbors broke into his apartment and cleaned it, thinking that the smell they were smelling was rotting food in his fridge that they had found. So in 1992, a 13-year-old girl named Brandy Myers had gone missing in the exact same area and had never been found. Now, Brian lived in the same neighborhood as Brandy at the time of her disappearance, and Brandy was never a Girl Scout, but prior to her disappearing, it was discovered later on that she had been going door to door in her neighborhood trying to collect books for a school book drive. So like maybe kind of a similar thing. So ex-wife Amy's telling the FBI all of this, but also told them that when Brian had told her this stuff, she originally didn't think he was telling the truth. She thought that he was basically just saying all of this so that it would intimidate her to stay with him. That don't make no sense to me. You tell me all of those like if you tell me I killed someone, I'd be like, calling the cops. Like I wouldn't second guess that, but I'd also be like, you just told me these minute details about a murder and I would not take that as in he's trying to like manipulate me.
No, it's too specific to not have some credibility.
And then to also know that a girl went missing fitting that description at the exact same time. And she's like, you know what? I'm going to bring it up now. So in the end, though Brandy Myers' disappearance was never solved, the investigators of the two Canal murders fully believe that Brian was responsible for it. But in the end, Brian was eventually given two death sentences for Angela Barrasso and Melanie Bernasse's murders. But even after he had been sentenced, the police still never seriously questioned Brian on Adrian's disappearance and death, though there were a lot of things and signs pointing him as a prime suspect. At some point, though, someone in the police department had come forward to like a media reporter or something like that, and said that they didn't investigate Brian for Adrian's disappearance because it was, quote, going to be a waste of time, end quote, because he had already been given two life sentences.
Which is a shitty excuse. One, the family. Two, everyone needs closure.
Three, everyone needs closure.
You're not even going to look into him? Like, no. What if it isn't him? And the real killer's out there.
Yeah. You're just like, it's not him. We're not going to do it. Okay. Obviously, if you're Adrian's family, you push for them to do it, which they did. I'd also circle back and revisit that whole T-Mobile thing and get a warrant to find people's locations. You know, even if it wasn't one of the party goers, because I'm pretty sure it wasn't, still do your job. Do what you're paid for. So it was in 2021 when the lead detectives changed in Adrian's case. A year later, the new head detective, his name was Detective Gregory Dwart. He said in a documentary that they were currently following a new lead and it happened to be somebody that was already in prison. He didn't give out any more information regarding on who it was or maybe new evidence that they had found. I would like to think that maybe when they say a new lead who's already in prison, maybe it was Brian because they never really investigated him. But it also could just be somebody completely random. Because since that interview, there has been no updates on what is now considered a cold case for Adrian's murder.
Are you fucking kidding me?
So I do want to take a second and head all the way back to good old Thomas Simon Sr. The dude ended up staying in the news until about 2018 because he was arrested for coercing a victim into having sex. He recorded the sex and then he blackmailed the woman with the footage. But in the end, love this, his charges were all dropped because the police were never able to find the actual footage. But in my head, he was still probably threatening the woman, whether or not there was actual footage or not. He was threatening her with footage. So he did plead guilty to one count of disturbing the peace, but he didn't even get like probation. He didn't get any jail time, no probation or anything. And 2 days after that court case, him and his son, Thomas Jr., moved together to North Dakota and haven't been heard from or seen in 4 years.
That's probably a good thing.
Adrian's dad, good old Rick, he kept out of the media for about 10 years now. Both him and Adrian's friend Francisco have always just wanted justice for Adrian, but don't want to be in the limelight whatsoever. But they continue to look over everything and trying to push and advocate for police to figure out who murdered her. And unfortunately for all of us, that is it. And that is the case of Adrian Salinas.
That was a whirlwind and I'm pissed.
Like, there's two very good suspects.
I mean, I'm leaning towards Brian.
Thomas Jr.'s got some weird shit happening. You're going to tell me he's going to pull a chainsaw or hacksaw or whatever out of his trunk after the cops ask for him to come in to be spoken to and he don't have, like, that's just weird. Maybe he's just weird.
So I think he's just weird.
I personally think it was Brian. It fits everything to a T. The fact that he was known and from cell phone records to be a mile from Adrian's location during all of this and was planning on leaving that house that morning at the exact same time that she was going to be outside, drove the exact same car as what was seen in the security footage. I mean, that all kind of just points it to Brian.
And his location was in the area where they thought her body came from.
2 days later.
2 days later, whoop-de-doo.
Yeah.
I am pissed off they haven't found his car because we have seen cases where they have found the car 30, 40 years later. Aisha Degree.
Oh.
Found the car.
Yep.
Morgan Nick. They found the car.
Yep.
And it still had like blood and hair in it.
I did some shit from freaking Tampa Bay. Remember with the bodies? And they found the truck like 20 years later and it was still with the same dude.
Yeah.
It's somewhere.
Unless he like blew it up and no one.
I mean, he's a zombie hunter, so you never know. Yeah. Isn't that a really sad case? And I encourage all of you guys, please go look at pictures of this case. I should have made a slideshow. It was, but I knew Kylie would look it all up anyways. Yeah. They're weird. Brian's a weird dude. He's a creepy looking guy. Like you would see him and you were like, he's done stuff before.
Not right in the head.
Yeah. And Adrian was a pretty, pretty girl, but it's a sad case. For anyone who's at this point right now and still listening, if you have any information on the disappearance or/ the death of Adrian Salinas, please contact the Tempe Police Department. Their phone number is 480-350-8311, or you can always submit a tip to the FBI. I don't have their phone number. Just look them up. That's pretty easy. As of right now, the case is cold. They still do have what I do like though, is they have a unit on it. So they have a cold case unit on it, but there's no evidence. You want to jump into overtime?
Listen to it.
You got anything for us today, Kylie?
Oh, I have a little case update.
Oh,
the day after we posted the Aisha Degree episode, we got an update.
Yeah. Yeah. What are the odds, right?
Good timing. But the Deadman family that's being investigated, they owned this property that used to be a school. I think there's like 3 or 4 buildings on the property. It's a little northeast of Shelby where all this went down, and it was searched by the FBI and law enforcement on Friday. They bought the property a couple years before Aisha went missing, and then they sold it in 2004, and the new owner said, yeah, come search it. So we haven't heard anything since the search, but they are still searching. So that's
which
good.
Is great.
Yeah.
Huge. Yeah. My mom had texted, what did she say? She texted me the other day that she had to catch up. Cause you know, so for the past 2 weeks, Millie and I were in North Carolina visiting the fam. And then I had a work conference, stuff like that. And so obviously while I'm there, my mom's not listening to any of the recordings while we're doing them and stuff like that. But she wanted me, she texted me, let's see, yesterday in the morning, very early in the morning. So I was like, Yolanta, what time did you wake up to listen to these? She said, quote, just finished listening to Drew Peterson, asshole. And then the Aisha degree story, heartbreaking. Her poor family waiting all of these years.
We did get a comment on the YouTube episode for Drew Peterson. It was a good comment. Sorry, I need to make a correction. The city is not Boiling Brook. It is pronounced Bowling Brook. I lived a few miles from their house. This is a great story. Thank you for telling it. Such a shame.
Okay, is the commenter's name Ella? Because my aunt, Chacha Ella, texted me. Shout out to you, Chacha Ella. Is it her?
No.
Okay. She texted me and told me that I had said the name wrong. Whatever. Whatever.
If that's only mistakes we make, I'm fine with it.
I'm cool. Look, if I mispronounce a name, totally fine. Totally fine. If I got information incorrect, though, like full on, let me know. I would rather, you know, because we are getting our sources from so many different places. Like I read articles, I read their Wikipedias, and then I have to go fact check all of that because I don't trust Wikipedia. I can edit a Wikipedia if I wanted to. And then I'm listening to podcasts, and sometimes I don't do it often. Sometimes I'm watching a documentary. I think there's a few ones that are out right now. I just don't have time anymore, Kylie. Like podcasts are easier because I can pop like one of the AirPods in, but videos are just non-existent in my world unless it's Miss Rachel.
My problem is I can only watch like one show at a time, like binge watch it. And I finally decided now I need to watch The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
So I'm on season.
I got all of that before I got pregnant. So thank God.
I'm on season two. I think the last season comes out soon.
Yeah.
So
that's a good one.
It's juicy.
It is. My mom and I really liked that one. Funny you said that, Handmaid's Tale. I'm the exact same way. I can't watch multiple shows. I have to watch one at a time. So right now, and I do big binges. So like something with so many, like last year I binged all of Big Brother. It took me like a year to watch it because there's like 30 seasons.
So I just finished Lost.
Oh, did you? That was a good one too.
It was a good binge.
Yeah. You know what I started today? Fortunately, thank you, Hulu, because I think it's on Hulu. They don't have season one through a certain number. So I'm starting at season 27, which is nice. Survivor. How have I not watched Survivor in my life? I feel like if I had watched Survivor even just 5 years ago, I would have applied to go on Survivor.
That's funny you say that because I was just thinking last night that I need to start watching Survivor, which leads me to my next point. Do you watch The White Lotus? Because the creator of The White Lotus, he was on Survivor and he's a big fan of it. And that's why I was like, oh, I need to watch Survivor.
So this is going to be so controversial. No, it's not. I love The White Lotus, but I've only seen season one because I had the baby when seasons two and three came out. And so I haven't been able to watch them. All of my friends are big fans of White Lotus. I know it's on my radar. I should have started that before Survivor because now I've got like 50 seasons I've got to watch before I can watch anything else. But I did hear that the director was on Survivor, which makes total sense because they're a little odd and out there, some of them. But also I heard that there's other Survivor cast members in the shows.
I think season two was my favorite of The White Lotus.
Oh, see, I've only seen one and I have to say I loved one.
Yeah, I think you'll like two a lot. Three, the finale was last night. I'm a little pissed off, but I won't spoil it.
I heard people were pissed off at season three's intro music.
Yes.
Like it's completely different because we like the fun, you know, but whatever season three is, it's not the best.
It's not danceable. That's the problem.
Yeah. Is Walter Coggins in that in the third season?
What is his name?
Isn't it Walter Walter Coggins? What's his name?
Walton Goggins.
I was really close. You knew what I meant there, Kylie. Love him.
He's great.
Hilarious. Yeah, he's really fun.
Which is funny because I'm the only shows I have to watch like as they come out is The White Lotus and Righteous Gemstones because of the spoilers. And he's in both of those shows and they air at the same time on HBO or the same day.
You know what? There's a one of the shows that he's like main character in. It is not a genre that is normally my cup of tea. But Cameron watched like we have the same taste, Cam and I. So Cameron watched like the first episode of this and he's like, dude, you gotta watch this with me. So I did. It's called Fallout. Did you ever watch that?
I haven't heard of it.
It's some good shit. So it's, I think there's a video game based off of it. And so that's where you usually lose my interest because I'm like, meh, it's not cool. It's like a, I don't want to say zombie apocalypse kind of scenario, but it kind of is, but it's also futuristic. Like there's underground bunks where the future people live and stuff like that. It's very hard to describe, but he's the main character and he did a phenomenal job. It's called Fallout. I want to say it's on Prime. Oh, Kylie, it got a 94 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay, I'll have to add it to the list.
That's really good. Love me some Walter Goggins. Oh, it is giant forehead. So yeah, anyways, that's it for me. All right, wonderful woman and listeners, thank you for tuning into another episode of Over My Dead Pod. If you want even more information about this case or other cases that we've done, check us out on our website at overmydeadpod.com. We're on all the socials. I'm not even going to describe them to you. Comment, like, subscribe, love, chit chat with us. We love it. And we will see you next week for another episode. Bye.
Bye.